Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. I'm in also with Lil Queen Trash Mouth, my very good friend and fellow DJ. I appreciate you joining. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, as always.
No, thanks for being back. Oh, tell me about your shirt. Oh, it's Aaliyah. Mm-hmm. So tell me about, tell everybody again who's new about your show and about your shirt. Because I love how politically active and vocal and caring you are.
Thank you. I also appreciate that about you and your show. My show is on Friday mornings now from 10 to noon, whole 2 hours. And I think the easiest way to sum it up is it's an anti-capitalist show. I talk about lots of different things, from dismantling white supremacy cultural systems to yesterday was a whole show about tax resistance. Yes. So run the gamut, but I think it all comes under the umbrella of anti-capitalist.
Right. And that is a lot of Martin Luther King Jr.'s work. And I love that we can relate over this. And I have you here to talk a little bit more about the American dream. Oh, so your shirt is Aaliyah. Yes. So you're not, I mean, you talk about anti-capitalist, but you also relate it to other things. And I was really mm-hmm. moved by a show that you did a couple of weeks ago about women as property, people as property, and how that started with women in history. Just touch on just 1 second, and your love for Aaliyah.
A couple weeks ago I've been weaving in the history of hierarchical systems into my show, because to me it's kind of how we got to such a hyper-capitalist place. And one of the first levels of establishing a hierarchy is, you know, somebody's got to be less than you to have a hierarchy. In the first subjugation when it comes to people was women, then the child subjugation started within the family unit and then extended out from there. And what I did with music on that day is I played all songs that were written or popularized by men, but I played the female cover version. So women singing songs traditionally sung by men. And to me, that changes a song. Like when Britney Spears is singing My Prerogative versus Bobby Brown, it's a different song. Yeah, I mean, I could sit here and talk for the rest of the hour about women as property as it relates to Aaliyah and Britney Spears, right? So, but I won't, because
we're going to talk.
That's a different show.
That's a different show. And people are just going to have to keep coming back. We give them little teasers. So, all right. Well, both of us were fascinated. You're in the book club, obviously. And this selection is A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And I was very moved, as were you, by the introduction alone. I think we both agree that we could have done a whole hour just on Bishop T.D. Jakes Sr. intro. Mm-hmm. And I want you to say what you said when you sat down. You're like, the first line alone. So, yes, like, I'm going to let you kick it off, because my underlines are after the first line, but also very early in.
I feel like the first line of this introduction could be like a tagline for either of our shows, right? But the first line is, "It would appear to me that in many ways our country has lowered its head into the soft, satiny pillow of apathy." Whoo!
"We have been lulled to sleep by indifference and rest in the vain pursuit of economic images of success, while a stone's throw away there are children dying in the streets."
Yep.
My underline is the second half of that paragraph, which is the next sentence is here. In this generation, we question how men can sleep while people die, children starve, and communities collapse. Perhaps it has been good for men to sleep. Perhaps sleep is the only time that prejudice and injustice, indifference and apathy finally recede far enough for conscience to speak and the voice of God to be heard. And this is a very packed paragraph.
Yes, it is.
I was opening this segment for a couple of weeks with the song Wake Up Everybody. Mm-hmm. How do you feel as a person with a platform like this radio show, and I know we've talked about this in private, but I'd like to talk about it in front of the audience. Speaking up and being awake, is it hard for you to be brave?
Yes and no. Yes, it's hard because it gets exhausting, but also no, because I feel like doing anything else would not be me, wouldn't be true to myself. That's not who I am. That's not who I've ever been. I think it's actually a lot harder for me to stay quiet, for better or worse, right? For my own well-being. But it's exhausting, and vulnerability is hard, even when it's honest and true, right? It's hard to be vulnerable, and it's hard to watch other people still be so in the soft, satiny pillow of apathy, right? When you sit here for 2 hours a week for how many years, it can get maybe a little disheartening.
Especially with all the extra work that we do that isn't actually the on-the-air time.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of a lot of hidden hours that goes into doing shows the way that you – actually, several DJs on this platform do shows, and I'm grateful for every single one of them. It's also hard to, when I talk about things here and have been talking about things here for so long on air, it really starts to become apparent who's not listening to KMRD on the reg. Mm-hmm. And then that gets frustrating. I think what gets frustrating is having to like have these repeat conversations with people who aren't trying to wake themselves up in any way, shape, or form. Because I don't actually believe that you can wake someone else up fully. Mm-hmm. It has to be a conscious choice at some point.
Yes. What's the reward? Why do you keep doing it? I know. I don't know. These questions are just coming out. I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah. I don't know. That's also a hard one. Sometimes it feels like there's not a lot of reward. Sometimes it feels like we are on a backslide to, you know, horrible times in more ways than one. And The Simpsons did a whole labor union, awesome, like, Eat the Rich episode, right? So, like, I feel that all these little stones in the bucket, whatever, drops in the bucket, are adding up. And it is seeping into mainstream culture. Like, there's, you know, Willow Smith is, like, bumping out anti-capitalist jams. Pink, her new album is widely anti-capitalist, pro-community, anti-isolation. So I don't know. I think it's, again, seeping into the mainstream culture.
Thank you for sharing, number one. I know that even if other people don't feel strong enough or brave enough to speak out in public or stand up to their families or, you know, all the different ways that people have to actually take a stand in the world, sometimes it can get very discouraging for all of us. And I feel less alone when I hear, you know, the voices of other preachers and other choirs. You know what I mean? Like when that whole idea, I'm preaching to the choir, right? The only people listening are my friends or people who feel the same way. I do get people coming up to me, though, quite often and say, wow, I never really thought about it that way. And for me, it is hard to stay brave when I feel isolated and participating in a system that's really stacked against me on so many levels. I feel like a walking target sometimes, but I give a lot of credit to the people in our community who are encouraging us in this work, you know, to get to the root of the American dream.
Yep. And then I would say too, on the, what's the reward, right?
Yes.
One of the lines in the introduction, I can conclude that in reality, independence is not a day, but a journey.
Right.
And I think remembering that helps.
Yeah. Yes. I think it was John Lewis is like, democracy is a marathon, or, you know, whatever. What else do we want to talk about in the introduction before we move into the actual sermon? I mean, I'm here. I've got a couple of more small points, but I want to let you
grab one. Yeah, I think, now I'm jumping back to the first page of the introduction, but the American dream is far more than a sermon. It is a message. No, it is an alarm. I loved that line again, with just like keeping the metaphor of waking up. And also, yeah, like really at this point with, you know, we're going to contextualize what was going on in history, but it was like an alarm time.
Yeah.
We were like now, it was very much an alarm time. Bells were ringing. And again, this is in 1965. This is leading to a lot of great movements.
Brown versus the Board of Education, as we learned, happened in 1954. Mm-hmm. So we're 10 years into an overt televised civil rights movement. Yep. Because there's been civil rights movements happening since the inception of America.
However, probably the beginning of civilization, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. Word.
Yeah, I think that is a pretty, again, timeless struggle.
Like, I'm still going deep. Like, I'm mm-hmm. trying to go way deep into the beginning of civilizations, right? So, pre-Sumeria, Kemet, you know, the oldie cave scribblings. And I wonder, was there ever a time, because I think at the core belief of many people, there's people here who say people always been messed up. They always going to be messed up. It's been happening since the beginning of time. And then there are other people who are like, we had a utopia before and everybody lived together. And maybe it's all of it has been happening at once since the beginning. And it's just, what do you want to give your energy to? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, infinite truths, infinite realities. I think there was a time when we were a little more communal in existence and not so hierarchical. I don't think it was utopic, mm-hmm. but I do think it was a little more, I don't know, less dominion driven.
A smaller worldview, more on the village and the surrounding mm-hmm. villages and the resources. Join us for our anthropology class, folks, as we imagine a past.
That's what anthropology is. I bet we'd imagine a better one.
Yeah, I give up on imagining the future. That's really hard. Yeah. You know, just imagine what had happened to get us here. Well, you know, and I was recently watching this thing on Zora Neale Hurston, and I thought her anthropology journey was really fun in a way that I would like to do it, in the immersing herself in her own culture. And I feel like that's kind of what I'm doing right now, except I'm so late, but I in my own age. But I want to do more of that, you know, travel around to where my people and find out, not just through like ancestry.com or whatever, but it, like, very surfacey, like, who looks like me? Where do we spend our time? What are we doing right now? And, you know, what did our foreparents do? And record that, you know, those stories, those legends. I mean, I know she did it, but at the same time, you know, her work was really discredited. But if we're working, you know, as a juxtaposed to anthropologists who were actually studying people from afar, mm-hmm. like, I didn't really even understand that a lot of the white male anthropologists who consider themselves pioneers of that, I don't know, is it technically a science? Because I don't think at that time it was.
I went to school for linguistics, so okay. I will say yes, because okay. I think the soft sciences, I mean,
right.
it's still, in theory, still following the same scientific...
Like psychology and things like that?
Yeah, there's still got to be like a scientific method to research papers, and I argue yes.
Uh-huh. So, you know, these cats been doing this, yep. and they didn't go there. They didn't live among the people. They were just making judgments and yep. writing stuff down, which attributed to the racism that we all experienced and still experience today. Well, let's look at 1965 leading up to this. This sermon was delivered by Reverend King. The version that we have in the book was delivered at Ebenezer Baptist Church on July 4th, Independence Day, 1965, in Atlanta, Georgia, where King was pastor. At this time, Lyndon B. Johnson was just sworn in on January 20th as president. 1 month later, Malcolm X is gunned down while giving a speech at the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem. Vietnam really kicks into full swing. There are a lot of battles on March 7th. the United States Air Force Second Air Division and South Vietnamese Air Force began a 3.5-year aerial bombardment campaign against North Vietnam. Something like that sound familiar? What year are we in with the Ukraine war right now? It's been 2 years. We're beginning the third year. It was February 2 years ago that it fully started. So now we're in the third year, a couple months into that, which we've been funding Ukraine, as far as we know, just that side, in that war.
Right.
And we're running out of money and desire to give them money. And the President Zelensky is asking fervently for more support. Something else I found later in the year here, in 1965, people became really upset with LBJ because he needed to send more troops into Vietnam. By July, it was recommended, and Johnson announces his order to increase the number of U.S. troops in South Vietnam from 75,000 to 125,000. And to more than double the number of men drafted per month from 17,000 to 35,000 to be drafted per month. Are there even that many people here?
Yes.
I can draft 35,000 people a month to send them overseas to fight. You know, and I'm sorry to the old heads, to our vets. Like, I'm really sorry that I'm, like, just catching up to what those numbers mean because I just grew up today. Like, after, you know what I mean? I'm just getting really hip to what these numbers really mean. After that announcement, later in the year, on August 31st, President Johnson, so a month later, he has to sign a law penalizing the burning of draft cards with up to 5 years in prison and a $1,000 fine. Because you're trying to take everybody, except the women and children, but 18 years old, you're still a child.
And draft dodgers, rich, wealthy,
right.
Now politician draft dodgers.
Where $1,000 is nothing
right.
to pay off that fine.
Or again, they were paying doctors to write BS. Yeah.
Didn't one of the presidents do that?
Trump.
I was going to say, you know. Yeah. Shady. He's running again. He's in it. So that's happening. And then by the end of the year, the number of troops in Vietnam increases. The request increases to 400,000. So we're just going to put that into context about why talking about peace and what we're actually doing as a country, what we're calling democracy. This is all relevant to today, folks. This is, even though we're killing people with drones a lot, we're losing less people on the ground than we did back then. Does that make war better for us?
No.
The amount of people that are dying in Vietnam, and I know that the United States pulled out of that as not victorious. We lost a whole lot, thousands of young men from here, and there are thousands of people being bombed to death on our behalf. I mean, I'm just gonna say it, our behalf, around Palestine right now.
Yep.
So what else happened after let's see, what did you want to say? You pointed at something.
We're gonna talk about maybe the space, what was going on with space.
Right. Yeah. Let me, I'm going to run through just a couple really quick things. So Malcolm X was gunned down. The Vietnam War really is, we're in full swing, throwing folks' lives away over there. Bloody Sunday had just happened where 200 Alabama state troopers attack 525 civil rights demonstrators in Selma as they attempt to march to the state capital of Montgomery for voting rights. And that was Martin Luther King and John Lewis and Coretta Scott King and a whole bunch of other activists, were brutally beaten. And one person, I believe, was beaten and later died on Bloody Sunday there. And then the march was called off and they actually finished it 3 weeks later on March 25th. Let's see what else happened. Did you know about this? Did you get this in your space notes? The world's first space nuclear power reactor.
No.
Did you know there, since 1965, they put a nuclear reactor in space? Did you know that? I'm learning so much, y'all, for this radio show. I really appreciate
it. Sounds like comic book villain. Like, that's not... I understand that it is real, but that doesn't sound real.
Yeah, I got a note here. And this is all data from Wikipedia. You just type in 1965 mm-hmm. and they'll give you a timeline of stuff happened that year. And I'm sure you can get it from other websites. April 3rd, the world's first space nuclear power reactor, SNAP, they call it SNAP too, 10A, is launched by the United States from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And the reactor operates for 43 days and remains in low Earth orbit. I'm curious to find out what happened to that.
Right. Is it still... Are we maintaining that? That yeah. sounds sketchy.
And at the same time that we are sending tens of thousands of people per month to Vietnam, on April 28th of 1965, the United States troops occupy the Dominican Republic. So we still found time and funds to occupy the island of Dominican Republic in Haiti. And the war on poverty at the same time is launched by Lyndon B. Johnson on July 30th. Can we just stop the war and the nuclear reactors yeah, right. in outer space, and then maybe we wouldn't have a war on poverty? So I'm going to pause there and throw it to you, where because I asked you to look up how many space launches there were in 1965, because I noticed that all of the money was getting spent in outer space as well as people here were having a war on poverty.
Yeah, so in 1965, we have a total of 124 orbital launches. Jeez. So that's like, that is one every 3 days, more even, right? That's like every 2-point-something days. 108 of those were considered successes, 15 failures, one partial failure, which I still don't know what that is. And then specifically, March 18th, cosmonaut Alexei Leninov became the first man to walk in space, so Soviet.
Because we're trying to beat this. So it was an ego game.
Of course it was. Yeah. Always is.
We got to beat them up there.
Yep. So just put a pin in what, you know, socialism and educating your populace and housing them. Like, that's how you get to space first, not yeah. the way we're doing it. Anyway, that's my show. on June 3rd.
But more people will go if you have restaurants up where you
On June 3rd, astronaut Ed White became the first American to walk in space. And then by July 14th, the spacecraft Mariner 4 is transmitting back the first pictures of Mars. So definitely had been launched by July 4th. So we've got, again, first dudes walking in space, and the first pictures of Mars is all pretty big.
Yeah. And 5 years later, Gil Scott-Heron releases Whitey on the Moon. Mm-hmm. And that just is more connected to the American dream. For whom? What exactly is it? And does it include absolution or from poverty? And an elevated quality of life. So let's talk about it. I've been looking here on page 86, mm-hmm. where it's the second page into the sermon. King opens it up with talking about how he was in a limousine, a car going from somewhere in Washington, D.C., and he doesn't really get specific. And I did try to find out what he was doing there on that day. With someone that reminded him that it was kind of poetic for them to be looking at the Lincoln Memorial on July 4th on their way to the airport. And King started to think about the American dream. And he's preaching from the subject of, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this is from the Declaration of Independence. Over on the next page, page 87, he says, America has been something of a schizophrenic personality, you know, since we've founded this country. On the one hand, we have proudly professed the great principles of democracy, but on the other hand, we have sadly practiced the opposite of these principles. God, there's so much to talk about.
I know.
Because who cares about democracy? We ain't a democracy anyway. We just throw it at everybody else.
But should we talk about that?
Yes,
I feel like we were talking about that the other night in non-radio life, too. Yes. And honestly, I was really happy to hear you say that because that is a point that my Republican grandfather has drilled into my head as early as I can remember being able to understand the words republic and democracy. He was always saying, Little Queen Trash Mouth, it's not a democracy. We are a democratic republic, which is different. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. So I was just like really thrilled when you said that the other night because so many people want to be like, oh, what? You're a fascist? I'm like, no, you just need to know what your government is actually doing.
Right.
And how it's actually set up to work.
And so when I found...
Or not work.
Right, right. Well, boom. Thank you for saying that because I'm studying, y'all. And I'm all of us are studying here together and I want to figure out how to better articulate to people what's happening here and why, if we're talking as people who know each other, I know you're not for it. So let's break it down.
Yeah.
And I was trying to break it down to myself yesterday by doing this reading and I should have emailed it to you. But I'm like, it looks like word salad to me. Mm-hmm. Okay. If America, I'm going to go back over to my favorite friend with the small print here, Wikipedia. Let me, so the U.S. national government is a presidential constitutional republic and liberal democracy with three separate branches. Okay. So. From what I've been able to understand, we're like three different things that they can just interchange, you know? So, I have the definitions of, republicanism. Political scientists and historians have described these central values as liberty and inalienable individual rights. I like those. Recognizing the sovereignty of the people as the source of all authority in law. I like that. Rejecting monarchy, aristocracy, and hereditary, you ready? Hereditary political power.
Oh! That doesn't sound like any Republicans I know at all.
It's all nepotism.
Yeah.
So can we sue them for that?
Right.
Okay.
Make them change their name.
They probably just changed the Constitution first.
Yeah.
Virtue and faithfulness. Okay. And we're still on the list of what qualities of Republicanism is. Virtue and faithfulness in the performance of civic duties and vilification of corruption.
Okay. Okay.
I'd like to have a constitutional lawyer on the show with
for
Little
real.
Queen Trash Mouth and I next time because I would love to know if we have grounds on which to sue for our rights. And it makes me wonder how certain activists, political activists, have gotten out of jail. We talk about Angela Davis quite often. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the actual cases and the approaches that the lawyers have taken to poke holes in the actual civil rights violations that have been happening just from people talking about their political views.
Yeah, I know. Any constitutional lawyers, give us a call. Yeah. I ran into this yesterday, too, with the tax resistance stuff because I was going down the, like, ways the Constitution has been used to justify war tax resistance. And it was one of those where I'm like, the Constitution is a very confusing document.
It is.
On purpose.
On purpose. And that's why when I was reading the different structures of our government, you know, like the because each one of those things that I said, liberal democracy, like that's its own thing. Constitutional republic is its own thing. A presidential constitutional republic is its own thing. Mm-hmm. So a liberal democracy, I had to read it five times and I have so many paragraphs to go with it, but I highlighted the points that seem to describe it. Elements of, within a liberal democracy are elections between or among multiple distinct political parties. Don't have that.
No, we do not.
A separation of powers into different branches of government. We have that.
Kind of.
The rule of law in everyday life as part of an open society. And the rule of law is that everyone is held to the same standard of law.
Right.
We don't have that. No.
And even again, the separation of government, when it's the same like super PACs or high-end donors,
mm-hmm.
is there a separation?
Right. And there are some things in deep into these definitions that go into money and politics, actually. And these are ideas that have come, you know, that were in play since Plato's time in ancient Greece. And then our founding fathers, or some people's founding fathers, the framers of the United States, the settlers here, decided that they came from a school of thought in Europe, you know, in the 1700s. Mm-hmm. This was a hot debate in the taverns over there.
You know, Thomas Hobbes, John Locke, all those guys.
Yeah, John Locke and them, right? All right, what else do they have here? So then universal suffrage. Do we have that? Suffrage, everyone, means the right to vote. We don't have that.
Nope, not from the beginnings, and I, again, still don't have that.
Right. So how can we define ourselves as a liberal democracy if we don't even possess or utilize the quality? We have to force people to do it. And so then we have the equal protection. This is a fun one. The equal protection of human rights, civil rights and civil liberties, and political freedoms of citizens. So we shouldn't have fear to talk about what we want to talk about on the radio, except now, subsequently, we have things in the Constitution like the Homeland Security Bill, anti-terrorism laws that criminalize free speech and political discourse.
Yep. And I mean, you know, during the Red Scare, we were blacklisting writers, directors, actors, plenty of public figures for not even speaking out about communism, but just having affiliation with the Communist Party in any way, shape, or form, right?
Yeah. Well, right now they're bombing people overseas just from being related to people with suspected political affiliations.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King was one of those people that was on that in that red book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really interesting here. And that's where we go, where instead of a unified, this just came to me, instead of a unified government that operates under a constitutional republic and liberal democracy, we find ourselves at best, right? Because this is an election year. At best, we have a division between what should be a joined philosophy of our country, where it's the liberal Democrats against the Republicans. And it seems to me that the country is presented to be adjoining. And that's why bipartisanship is such a huge conversation. Not just why, but one of the reasons why we all need to get along and hammer this out. But also, we're supposed to be unified.
Yeah.
And use the United best States. Of all of these philosophies to have a just society. Well, what do you want? What else you want to talk about? You want to talk about this book? it's taken 40 minutes to frame it all because it's really that deep, people. Because it is important. I mean, where I get discouraged is like, how are you just, if you just grab peace and love and just say that. And people are like, it's an unfinished concept. People are like, you don't make any sense. So I'm just letting folks know we're all aware what we're up against, but how do we get there? Back to you.
Well, again, there is so much in here. I'm now looking at page 88.
Lock the door. We don't have to let Barnacle in. Can you change the code? No.
No.
Okay. You love you, DJ Bar. She'll probably be like, that's great. You guys, like, you keep talking.
On the top of page 88.
Got you.
Dr. King starts talking about that all men are created equal does not mean, like, I don't really love the framing of intellectual capacity, but I do appreciate that he's making the point that it's like all work is excellent, and the person who sweeps the hospital is just as key as the surgeon, because without somebody keeping the hospital clean, what's a surgeon going to do? The germs are going to get in no matter what a surgeon does. And you know, where I come from about like my stance on labor and work is that it is all equal. It is all valid. And it should all be
compensated.
Fair. Yes. Fairly. Yes. Everyone should be guaranteed a living, not even just surviving wage, a thriving wage for doing any work in this society, because again, we can fund it.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yes, the line that I narrowed that down to was what it does mean is that all men are equal in intrinsic
yes.
worth.
Yes.
And, well, going back one page on 87, the challenges that he considers to the American dream, a challenge that first, I want to reiterate the fact that we are challenged more than ever before to respect the dignity and the worth of all human personality. And we are challenged to really believe that all men are created equal. And that's like, why is it so hard for some people to believe that? Is it eugenics?
That's part, I mean, that and hierarchy, right? Like yeah. we're so indoctrined by this hierarchical structure of thinking in every facet of our life. That to me is why, is when you are so conditioned to think in, again, a hierarchical one step above the other, that's not equal. It's not. He brings up the caste system in here.
I want to read about
okay,
that.
Okay, go ahead. Take it. Okay.
So, yes.
Yeah.
It's like we're so trained to like, if you're doing good if somebody's below you. And it was very interesting to me to read this part of where Dr. King realizes that he's an untouchable. Like, it's really deep. Yeah. And I also want to address it in the episode, Icky Mack and I were talking about this, where we're talking about, of course, we're talking about nonviolent resistance. We just grabbed the two names, MLK and Gandhi. And as we were later talking about things and I was editing this content, Mixcloud, Dream Queen 3AM on Mixcloud.com, and check us out on In the Cab with Dream Queen on YouTube. You'll see more things on there. It's not there yet. But and he's like, you know, MLK and Gandhi. And then I'm like, Gandhi. And then I'm editing and I'm like, crap, Gandhi, man. He you go deep into, I wouldn't want to kick it with Gandhi, actually. I mean, it was messed up, some of the stuff that mm-hmm. he was doing.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. And so I was watching this this movie the other day, a documentary. It's called Hidden Colors. And I was watching Hidden Colors Part 2, I believe. And he was talking about how there's a statue of Gandhi at the MLK shrine in Atlanta. Like, there's no statue of Martin Luther King there. There's a statue of Gandhi, though. And he's like, so Martin Luther King has a picture of Gandhi in his office, and then they just put not a statue of Dr. Yeah. King, but a statue of Gandhi over King's grave. King and his wife are there in Atlanta in their tomb. They put Gandhi there. And he's like, so when black children go there, and he's like, I went there as a child on Black History Month, and I'm seeing Gandhi. And I went there when I lived in Atlanta. And I'm like, wow, you know, like King was really into Gandhi. I'm like, he didn't make the thing for his right. own doggone funeral. So the idea that then there's still the push and pull between brown on brown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so King is saying here about a trip that he and his wife took to India. And he knows about the untouchables. And King didn't know that Gandhi was a racist and a separatist and also, yes. And yeah, because of all the different ethnicities that existed or racial, just ethnic groups that were existing in India. A whole other show about dark-skinned people and how we moved around the world and how colonialism really structured us oppressing each other. But King went and he was invited there. And so he was journeying to a school in the state of Kerala. And he was to speak at the local high school. And it was a school attended by and large by students who were the children of former untouchables. And I'm going to read his words here. Now, you know, in India, there was a caste system, and India has done a marvelous job in grappling with this problem. But you had your full caste and individuals who were in one of the castes. And then you had some 60 or 70 million people who were considered outcasts. 70 million people. Million people considered outcasts. That is not a minority.
No.
They were the untouchables. They could not go places that other people went. They could not do certain things. And this was one of the things that Mahatma Gandhi battled, along with his struggle to end the long night of colonialism. Also the long night of the caste system and caste untouchability. And so he's saying that the teacher was introducing him, the principal, introduced me and then came to the conclusion of his introduction. He says, young people, I would like to present to you a fellow untouchable from the United States of America. And for the moment, I was a bit shocked and peeved that I would be referred to as untouchable. Pretty soon, my mind dashed back across the mighty Atlantic, and I started thinking about the fact that at that time, no matter how much I needed to rest my tired body after a long night of travel, I couldn't stop in the average motel of the highways and the hotels of the cities in the South. I started thinking about the fact that no matter how long an old Negro woman had been shopping downtown and got a little tired and needed to get a hamburger or a cup of coffee at a lunch counter, she couldn't get it there. I started thinking about the fact that still, in too many instances, Negroes have to go to the back of the bus and have to stand up over empty seats. I started thinking about the fact that my children and the other children that would be born would have to go to segregated schools. I started thinking about the fact 20 million of my brothers and sisters were still smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in an affluent society. And I said to myself, yes, I am an untouchable. And every Negro in the United States of America is an untouchable. And this is the evilness of segregation. It stigmatizes the segregated as untouchable in a caste system. And it's a little interesting because he thought he was above that situation, even as badly as he's treated. That is in 1965. That's after his house had been bombed with his wife and baby inside by white supremacists.
And I mean, I think, too, there's so much power in our rhetoric around being a quote unquote free country that we don't realize that I would argue there's a caste system still in the United States.
Yes.
Several.
Yes.
Really. Right. Several that function in like heteronormative caste system, a class-based caste system, racially-based caste systems, all of this still exists in this country. Like, again, we're so conditioned. Oh, no, we're free. We don't do that here. Melting pot, blah, blah, blah. All these, like, buzz terms that were fed from day one. And it kind of does take somebody else to, like, oh, you think you're free in that country? I think the outside perspective can teach us a lot.
Right, because you're a world traveler yourself. And how did it feel to be a – oh, can I ask you this on the radio in front of everybody? Probably. How does it feel to – you don't have to answer it. I mean, you could take a time to marinate and tell me you want to get back because maybe we should come back next week and read the second part of the chapter.
We still haven't gotten into this sermon at all.
Heidi, you're going to get your show. How did it – like, did you feel like your mind was blown as a white woman traveling in many of these places?
In more ways than one, in several different ways. Probably the first like real way that again just really changed my thinking was a friend of mine in Peru who this was probably my second or third time down there too. Mm-hmm. But she said to me, you know, like her take on what was going on in the US with our citizenry was so different than how we see ourselves, but so true. Like my friend Nancy lived, born and raised in Pisac, Peru, very, touristy village in the Sacred Valley on the route to Machu Picchu. Actually kind of reminds me of Madrid in a way, where it's like tour buses drop off. All the tourists are usually gone by 6 or 7 p.m. and then locals get to kind of run the night, so to speak.
We belong to the night.
But she pointed out to me, like, she was working at resorts and like watching all of these people like have to escape their free, quote unquote, free privileged lives, right? Like we think we have it so good, then why do they need to go down there and escape and unwind on Nancy's turf, right?
Right.
Like who really is freer if you start looking at that kind of life and dynamic, right? Like Nancy's like so happy and free and communally supported. She's like, I don't need to escape my life. I'm happy. I feel good on a daily basis. Whereas we have to escape because we do not feel good on a daily basis. So
When's the last time you talked to Nancy in Peru?
She had a baby about 2.5-3 years ago. And I think that was the last time I talked to her directly, but she still works with one of my good friends that lives down there and runs a restaurant.
I would love to hear what it is, because how long ago was that for you when you were down there? I'm just thinking about what Ecuador just they stormed the Mexican consulate in Ecuador. And I feel like all of these places is so much unrest that is happening right now all over the world. And it's very reminiscent of 1965, where there's a world revolution going on. So I was just wondering how comfortable she is right now and where.
The last time I was in Peru was 2017. But I have been there through many strikes and disruptions. And the last time that I was there for a big strike, it was the indigenous people going against the government because the government wanted to build a new airport in Cusco, which I think they did succeed in doing, or make it an international airport. The one that was there was not. It was just national, not international. Basically, so wealthy tourists could bypass Lima and fly straight to Cusco and get to Machu Picchu in 2 days, not have to, like, take a taxi from airport to airport. You know, basic BS to make luxury travelers even more comfortable.
No, they mean they're on a spiritual journey, okay? They want to climb the pyramid. Don't take that away from them. They seek it.
But no, what I like one of the I know. Oh, yeah. One of the big reasons I am such a proponent of a general strike is because of how many times I have seen them work in Latin America specifically. And again, it's not like in France when general strikes work. In Latin America, there's no guarantee you're going to keep your job. There's no extra added government support for when you're a striking worker. It is all communal.
Yeah.
And it is everyone is agreeing, nope. These are non-negotiable, inalienable human rights that we want for our community, and we are all shutting down to make a point.
We got only about a minute.
I know.
And I just want to ask the question. Would you come? I want to ask two questions. One is, would you come back next week?
Yeah.
Can we do this again?
Yes. Okay.
And number two is, how much do you think is related to white supremacy? 30 seconds.
What? All of it. Everything is.
No, because, and that's it. It's just the real quick point is, like, you know, there's solidarity that they have. And number one, I think America's so too big, you know, but I don't want to say too big because then it puts an absolute on the possibility, which I don't want to do. Like, I want America to dream big. I have a dream that, you know, we're going to hold true to our values. And, you know, I underlined it. I'm just going to skip to the end where real quick, Dr. King is talking about all the doubt and all of the nightmares that his dream has been turned into. But, you know, he's saying that the dream is shattered, but I still have a dream that one day, you know, that all God's children will have food and clothing and material well-being for their bodies, culture and education for their minds, and freedom for their spirits. Like, even after everything, he still holds true to that. But I just want to think that, you know, it's so easy to other people in America because they're like, that document was written by white men with property, not for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't specify.
Who
they
did. Actually, they property. Did
because black people were classified as 3/5 of a human. Mm-hmm. So really, I don't really, in the Constitution, do I have a grounds?
Right.
And these things were amended and amended and amended. So we'll be back next week with a constitutional lawyer. And anybody out there that want to do it, 473-9696, you give tell DJ Barnacle that you want to leave a message for Dream Queen and Lil Queen Trash Mouth, that you're a constitutional lawyer and you want to help all people be free.
Yeah, we're looking for you.
We're looking for you. You can send me a note at Instagram at dreamqueen_3am. Lil Queen Trash Mouth, thank you. Do you have any final words you want to give?
Good weekend to everybody, unless you're exploiting workers.
Yes.
Remember, workers brought you the weekend, and they're fighting for your 3-day weekend. So hug a worker, always.
That public service announcement was brought to you by Hashtag Radio. That's Fridays, 10 to 12 Mountain Time on KMRD. And I'll be filling in for you in a couple weeks, but you're going to be back with me next Saturday. Love y'all. Be good, unless you're being civilly disobedient. Then be great.